Hello, and welcome to Legal Bites. If you're new here, my name is Alita. I'm a lawyer licensed in California and DC, and on this channel, we explain the law one bite at a time. We don't give legal advice, but we do talk about how the law works and try to look into our crystal ball to see how things might turn out. If you're enjoying this on YouTube, we'd love it if you could like the video, subscribe to the channel, share it with friends, all the great YouTube-y stuff. And if you want to listen while out and about, we're now offering our live streams in podcast form where you can leave a rating and review. Links are in the description below, as well as to our clips channel where you can find some of the best clips taken from our live streams. Otherwise, if you want to catch me elsewhere, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And if you want to support the channel, you can do so on Locals, Patreon, or by becoming a YouTube member, or by buying some really awesome Legal Bites merch. Again, all links are in the description below. And with that said, let's get into it. Hello, hello, and welcome. Can you guys hear me? Just want to make sure. Is my mic up? Just want to make sure everyone can hear me. Love seeing all the folks in the chat. People from everywhere. I see Lena Palmquist, a Bite Club member, saying everybody got their muffins ready. Okay. Yeah, you guys say that you can hear. Good. But welcome Crimson Angel from Germany. We've got Austin S.A. from Texas, Holly Jackson from the UK, April Fox from London, Libby S. from Ontario, Canada, Annalie Finch from Virginia. Got some folks from Houston right here. Melissa O'Neill, Secret McSquirrel, of course, from Scotland. Secret McSquirrel, I hope you're feeling well. I know that you have been undergoing treatment, so I can't believe that you have been like moderating still for like all of LawTube, it seems like. crazy. And Austin S.A., welcome to Bite Club. Welcome. Happy to have you here as a YouTube member. Look at this. We've got Norway. We've got India, South Africa. I love the fact that we've got folks from literally everywhere in these streams. It is so cool. It makes me so happy to see it because it's just nice seeing folks from all over the place. So, all right, we've got another latest in the law. It is Thursday, not the usual time that I usually go live, but today I was going through the unsealed documents, trying to figure out what would be an interesting topic to discuss. Because there's just so much there and I don't want to just go through the same documents as everybody else. I haven't had a chance to follow all of the other live streams of the documents that other folks have been talking about so far, but I wanted to, I don't know, just do something that was interesting, that I found was interesting, and hopefully you guys will as well. Before we get into those unsealed documents, a quick update on the Vanessa Bryant lawsuit versus LA County Sheriff's Department, LA County Fire Department, on the Kobe Bryant death images that were spread around. That trial, we actually have a trial date. So maybe it's a little bit of a tease by putting them on the thumbnail. But I guess it was, to me, it was enough of an update that I was like, yeah, this is worthwhile putting them actually up on the thumbnail for this one. But August 10th is when the trial starts for this particular case. So we will be tracking as much as we possibly can. Obviously, there won't be cameras in the courtroom. Normally, I would be relatively irritated, but in this particular case, maybe it's a good thing, although all of the images purportedly have been deleted, but there's likely to be graphic detail about those images. So I would anticipate that it's still going to be a relatively very sensitive trial to be covering. So maybe it is best that there are not cameras in the courtroom for that one. But you know, it is one that is very legally interesting, and also just very, I think, tragic and compelling. So I plan on doing, before trial starts, I plan on doing a VOD, a video on demand, pre-recorded one that is kind of sort of encapsulating all of the arguments from both sides for what they are arguing from their trial briefs, because both sides have now filed their trial briefs as of yesterday. So we'll be able to see basically what we anticipate those arguments to be going into this trial. So should be a very, very interesting case. Tragic, obviously, but how the two sides handle this one is going to be very interesting to follow as well. That is that one. Another one that is interesting related to Depp v. Heard is if you guys are familiar with House and Habit, Jessica Krause is her name. She runs the Instagram account House and Habit. She also has a Substack. Her Substack is actually as a general matter primarily behind a paywall, because she is an independent journalist. So we do like supporting independent journalists and whatnot. But she did have an update on Depp v. Heard, things that she has learned about Amber Heard from her sources in Hollywood, in and around Hollywood. That was a mind-blowing article. I'm not going to go into all of the details of the article. I will share with you guys the first paragraph from it. But you guys can definitely go and check it out. I don't know if I linked to this in the description. I will put the link in the chat though. Boom, right there. And then I will also put it in the description below. But she has made this one open, this particular article open to the public, at least for right now. And part of the reason why I don't want to go through this one in so much detail is because I would prefer people to go to her Substack and actually go and read it for themselves. But the other part is, like, this would 100% get demonetized, like within 2 seconds, just with all of the detail that she goes into, that people have told her of, that her sources have. But this is an image of Amber Heard at one of these parties that she details that is a part of a particular kind of lifestyle here. But I'll just read the first paragraph here before we get into the unsealed documents and whatnot. Depp v. Heard, Part 3. This is in a series so far. Outside of drunken violent tendencies, the sex parties were the first revelations to come at me repeatedly once I started to dig into Amber Heard's past. Information gleaned from varying sources who either knew her during this period or attended the parties themselves. Details lined up regarding costumes, satanic themes, and lesbian orgies performed on stages constructed at residences in and around LA and the Bay Area. The same faces in regular rotation. Tech gods, capitalists, founders, top executives, and up-and-coming entrepreneurs gathering roughly once a month for wild evenings fueled by alcohol, sex, and copious amounts of MDMA. Intriguing enough for you? Yes, this is, to answer the question in the chat, this is the article about that does involve a slashed dress. That is like one of the lesser sort of allegations in this article, but it is really, really fascinating. Definitely go if you are interested in digging into some of the wilder accusations about Amber Heard's past, go and check it out. I have absolutely no way of knowing whether any of this is correct or not. But I know that House and Habit has been digging in this case for a long time. I am aware that she has a lot of direct sources that reach out to her on a fairly regular basis. So definitely go and check it out. Okay. Anyway. That is that. Now let's get into the unsealed documents. I know I've talked a little bit about the unsealed documents on Monday. I did a live stream where I was picking apart, you could say I was picking apart, maybe thrashing, or maybe, I don't know, just sort of lampooning a particular article about these unsealed documents, right? Because there's been a lot of media coverage about these that are sort of picking and choosing certain parts of these documents and running with it. And most of the characterizations of these articles by the mainstream media or the legacy media, the traditional media, whatever you want to call them, right? The corporate media. Most of these articles have been basically characterized as Amber Heard argued this, Johnny Depp tried to get away with this, or Johnny Depp tried to exclude X bad information. And it's very frustrating because most of the reporting on it has been, I would say, for me personally, it's been frustrating because of the fact that they don't regularly cite to which part of the unsealed documents they're referring to. Sometimes there have been some articles that I've come across where they're like, yeah, in a February 28th filing or something like that. And you're like, oh, okay, I know where I can go. but most of the time it's like a random quote. And like a lot of times they won't even say where that quote even comes from, whether it's like from some random conversation or a filing or what have you. So it's very difficult to evaluate the credibility of these articles if you don't know where these things are coming from. So what I wanted to do was pull into at least one portion of these. I'm doing two things at the same time, which is always a problem for me. I'm sorry, guys. I'm trying to pull up the document here. Okay. Here you go. And I have to scroll. Anyway, I wanted to pull up at least one portion of one of these documents to sort of talk through some of the sort of documents that are in here, right? And what do they mean? What was going on here? What was the fight about? Because a lot of these are fights, to be honest, because a lot of these are, there are motions in limine, which is what we're going to go over in this particular live stream. Is we're going to go over specifically in opposition to a motion in limine. And then there are a lot of motions to compel. Motion in limine, by the way, of course, is a motion that is filed with the court having to do with like how the court is going to handle certain evidence or a witness or certain pieces of information, conversations and whatnot. Oftentimes it'll be about, you know, we're not allowed to use the word victim. It will be an example in like a murder case, right? Like that, like you can't refer to the decedent as a victim because that would be presupposing that the defendant is guilty. That would be a motion in limine. You know, you can also say you're not allowed to bring in certain evidence and the court will make a determination, or you can say, I want the judge to make a determination ahead of time that they absolutely are going to bring in a certain pieces of evidence or that they will allow in certain pieces of evidence, because that'll make things more efficient later on down the road when we are actually at trial. So we don't have to stop and argue about it then. Let's do it ahead of time. Those are the kinds of conversations that you can have around these motions in limine. A lot of the other filings here are motions to compel, oppositions to motions to compel. Particularly, we're talking about discovery. We're talking about how, for example, when Johnny Depp had a bunch of questions asking for information about Amber Heard's allegations about the sexual assault and all this other stuff that came up. And then Amber Heard's team just objects and says, you have requested too many interrogatories. The statutory maximum is 30. You have requested more than that. And so therefore you are not entitled to a response. And so then Johnny Depp's team has to come back and say, well, actually the statute says that we are entitled to a response if justice so requires, et cetera, et cetera. You've amended your complaint. And so we're entitled to more information, you know? And so you have a lot of this back and forth that is, that happens in these cases. In most civil litigation, in my experience, it doesn't come down to a single motion to compel, because usually you end up working these things out at a certain point through the process of meeting and conferring through that's the technical term for the process, where you are getting on the phone with opposing counsel, you're getting in emails, you're confirming all of these things and writing through emails saying, we talked about this, we talked about that. Here's what the law says about this objection. Here's what the law says about that objection. And then eventually you work things out. Typically, for me personally, I have never had, I've gotten very close to having to file a motion to compel, but I have always been able to work things out, and I've never had a motion to compel filed against me. Part of the reason for that is because most lawyers understand judges don't like to have to get drawn into these arguments. They much prefer the attorneys to be able to work those issues out. And so when they do get pulled into it, it's a drag on the system, because then there's more hearings that have to get scheduled. There's always a backlog for judges, stuff like that. So anyway, there's a lot of documents like that in these unsealed documents. But what I want to go over is the witnesses that Johnny Depp listed in his witness list. Amber Heard filed some objections to some of them. So those included Gina Deuters, Travis McGivern, Keenan Wyatt. So there are some, and some of the language in some of these motions, I can't remember if it was this one or one of the other ones that I was looking through. I've been reading through quite a bit today, but some of the language in these motion arguments will be, you know, very mild, where they say something along the lines of like, well, we understand why Amber Heard's legal team would want to try to keep this information out, but this is why we're entitled to it. And then there are other motions where they are straight up like, this is straight up gamesmanship, yo. Like she is abusing the process. And this is another example of her trying to abuse the process. And so it's kind of funny to see the different tones that they will use through these different motions. So yeah, by the way, hi in the chat, Black Belt Barrister. Good to see you here. I know it's been a while. Been a while since we've hung out. And also I saw earlier that Uncivil Law was here too. So I don't know if he's still here, but hello again. So and before I get to sharing this, let's get some super chats here. Pilintoda, thanks for the super chat, says, yay, greetings for Germany, 10 euro for treats for Indy and the Pussycats. Thank you. Thank you. Shiv Shakti Udasin, thank you so much for the super sticker. I love it. Britt Cormier, hey, thanks for the super chat. Good to see you again. Says, always picked up stripper vibes from AH's behavior. Some of the documents reinforce those vibes. However, the more I see of the seal documents, I think I was being too generous with stripper. Well, you might want to see that House and Habit article to pull on that thread if you are so interested. Julia Getman, thanks so much for the super chat, says, choose emails, fire. Yeah, some of those can get spicy. Some of those can get spicy for sure. Okay, let us go through it. All right, so this is from, and I have the document in particular linked in the description below if you guys are interested in checking this out for yourselves. The document is, of course, from Andrea Burkhardt's wonderful website. She was so great in marshaling the documents, gathering the pool from the Justice for Johnny Depp community. Folks crowdfunded money really quick to help pay for those documents, which was awesome. And of course, there was a really great surplus of that, which Andrea decided to donate to charity. So all good stuff about this. And once again, like, I can't give enough props to Andrea Burkhardt for such a beautiful job of not just gathering the documents, but then also putting them up for the public, for everyone to see, and for doing it in such a beautiful, organized way, making it so incredibly easy for everyone to do it. So Yeah. So follow the link that's in the description below, and you should be able to, if you go to andrewburkhardt.com/documents, is like the bulk of it. That's where you can find the rest of the documents if you are so interested. So, but this right here is page 83 of the document that I have linked in the description. So if anybody wanted to follow along, this is where that is. This is a motion in limine that was filed on March 28th, 2022. And it is plaintiff John Depp's omnibus opposition to Amber Laura Heard's motion in limine number 11, respecting Mr. Depp's witness list. So this is all about the witnesses here. And also, I wanted to give a shout out. Lucky, thank you so much for gifting 2 memberships to some folks. I appreciate that. That is so, so kind of you, so generous of you. So I wanted to catch that before, because StreamYard doesn't let me save that. So while I see it, I wanted to catch that out. So, all righty. Okay. So this was filed under sealed, which is why it is now unsealed. Okay. And why is this not, am I on the wrong page here? Ah, okay. Here we are. Page 83. Okay. Now you guys can see what I'm looking at. Okay. Let's get into it. Introduction and summary of issues. So just for a little bit of context here, Amber Heard's side filed a motion in limine to presumably try to exclude some witnesses from Johnny Depp's witness list. And so now he is filing an opposition in response, basically to say, this is all the reasons why Amber Heard is wrong. All right. Introduction and summary of issues. This is a blatantly and shamelessly misleading motion brought by Ms. Heard and her attorneys in a display of transparent bad faith gamesmanship. Okay. So Ben Chu's not splitting hairs here. Right out of the gate, we've got some spice and we've got some shade and we've got all of the things here. So we can see exactly how Johnny Depp's side feels about this particular motion. As detailed more fully below, the motion inexcusably mischaracterizes the record, and Ms. Heard has no valid basis to seek the exclusion of any of the witnesses on Mr. Depp's witness list. Mr. Depp has provided appropriate contact information and, moreover, has gone above and beyond the requirements of Virginia law to attempt to obtain access for witnesses for Ms. Heard to depose. And then there's a footnote 1. It says, because Ms. Heard's motion in limine number 11 significantly exceeds the typical 5 pages and seeks to exclude 7 trial witnesses in their entirety, while also seeking to limit the means of presenting testimony of 8 other witnesses, the number of issues necessitates the filing of a slightly longer than usual opposition to what would, under ordinary circumstances, have been at least 2 or 3 motions in limine. So basically they're saying, look, we understand that what we are filing right now is not what we're supposed to be filing, but the reason is because we have to, in order to respond to everything that they did, which was not exactly filed in the proper form as well. So if we were required to be kept to that standard, but they aren't, then that is unfair to us. This is why we're doing it this way. More shade. More shade. Okay. Ms. Heard's attempt to attack Mr. Depp for supposedly providing inadequate contact information for witnesses is unsupportable and rings particularly hollow given Ms. Heard's own record of providing minimal contact information for her own witnesses. For instance, she provided only phone numbers for her sister, Whitney Henriquez, her ex-girlfriend, Tasia Van Rie, her close friend slash favorable witness, Io Tillett Wright, and her friend, Brandon McCulloch, of all of whom are on her witness list. This lack of contact information required Mr. Depp to engage in extensive and very expensive efforts to track down and serve Mr. Wright over the course of more than a year, and Mr. Depp was never able to track down and serve Tasia Van Rie. In addition, Ms. Heard only ever provided an email address for another key witness who was identified on Ms. Heard's witness list, Dr. Bonnie Jacobs. Moreover, Ms. Heard has listed at least one person on her own trial witness list that was not identified in her interrogatory responses, Adir Abergel. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Ms. Heard has also blatantly interfered in Mr. Depp's discovery from third-party witnesses, including disrupting the deposition of Ms. Heard's sister, Whitney Henriquez. So in other words, it seems like their argument here is what's good for the goose is good for the gander. In short, Ms. Heard's arguments are specious. Ms. Heard's counsel should have known better than to bring this motion, which should be denied in its entirety. And then here's the argument section. First off, Gina Duders. Gina Duders is the wife of Mr. Depp's assistant, Stephen Duders. She is a UK resident who has no connection to Virginia. Anticipating that counsel for Mr. Depp would likely represent her if she became involved in this action as a witness, Mr. Depp's interrogatory responses listed the contact information for Ms. Duders as Mr. Depp's counsel. Ms. Duders has been listed on Mr. Depp's list as of persons with knowledge since 2019, but Ms. Heard waited until the end of 2021 to seek her deposition. Bizarrely, on November 30th, 2021, Ms. Heard emailed Mr. Depp's counsel Virginia subpoenas for documents and personal appearance by Ms. Duders, declaring that this should be considered service on Ms. Duders. Counsel for Mr. Depp responded the same day, noting that this did not constitute effective service and that, more importantly, Ms. Duders is not subject to subpoena in the U.S. As the court knows, and as Ms. Heard's attorneys certainly ought to know, Elaine, the fact that Ms. Duders is not a resident of Virginia, is not present in Virginia, and is not subject to jurisdiction in Virginia, or in the United States generally for that matter, means that those subpoenas were legal nullities. And then it cites to Yelp Inc. v. Hadid Carpet Cleaning Inc., with the quote, "We conclude that the circuit court was not empowered to enforce the non-party subpoena Deuces Tecum, directing Yelp to produce documents located in California." Indeed, it is hard to imagine what Ms. Heard's attorneys could possibly have believed would be the legal effect of emailing Virginia subpoenas to counsel to obtain testimony and records from a UK citizen residing in the UK. Ms. Heard's attorneys are obviously aware that Virginia subpoenas are ineffective as to persons outside Virginia, which is why the parties have relied on scores of California subpoenas for witnesses who are resident in California. Massachusetts subpoenas for witnesses in Massachusetts, Texas subpoenas for witnesses in Texas, and Illinois subpoenas for witnesses in, you guessed it, Illinois. This is such a self-evident legal point that it is hard to believe Mr. Depp has been forced to make it in this opposition brief. Indeed, of the more than 60 third-party fact depositions that have taken place in this action, not one of them took place pursuant to a Virginia subpoena, because none of the witnesses are in Virginia. Ms. Heard has always had the option of taking steps to take valid discovery via international processes. The UK is a party to the Hague Evidence Convention, and procedures exist to depose UK residents in connection with foreign actions via a subpoena by order of the High Court of London. Instead, Ms. Heard's attorneys doubled down on the baffling position that Ms. Duders was somehow required to respond from the UK to a Virginia subpoena that had been emailed to attorneys in California. In response to a demand by Ms. Heard's counsel that Ms. Duders appear in response to the subpoenas, Mr. Depp's counsel again explained on January 21st, 2022, that Ms. Duders is a UK resident and is not subject to subpoena power or jurisdiction in Virginia, while also offering that we can look into whether Ms. Duders might agree to a voluntary deposition. On January 23rd, 2022, counsel for Ms. Heard apparently determined to ignore the fact that her Virginia subpoenas were completely meaningless, responded by email that Ms. Heard obtained valid service of these subpoenas on Ms. Duders, intends to proceed with the deposition as noticed on January 27th, and we will send you the Zoom link. Mr. Depp's counsel responded again that her Virginia subpoenas were nullities as to Ms. Duders, and reiterated again that Mr. Depp's counsel would explore whether Ms. Deuters would appear voluntarily for deposition, but that absent such a voluntary appearance, Ms. Heard's only option would be to seek discovery via international processes in the United Kingdom. Ms. Heard never took any steps to take international discovery in the UK and never followed up again on deposing Ms. Deuters. Nonetheless, in a good faith effort to go beyond his obligations under Virginia law, Mr. Depp sought, through counsel, to obtain Ms. Deuters' agreement to appear on a purely voluntary basis for a deposition. Ms. Deuters did not immediately agree, but eventually did so. Upon being advised that she was willing to appear voluntarily, Mr. Depp's counsel immediately notified Ms. Heard of that fact. Because several weeks had gone by at that point, it was impossible to arrange Ms. Deuters' deposition prior to the discovery cutoff, so Mr. Depp offered to allow Ms. Heard to depose Ms. Deuters the week following the discovery cutoff. Ms. Heard's counsel refused, apparently preferring to make a long shot bid at excluding Ms. Deuters. The choice to proceed to trial without deposing Ms. Deuters was Ms. Heard's. That's a pretty decent argument. Simply put, there is no valid basis to exclude Ms. Deuters as a witness, and Ms. Heard's attorneys should have known better than to bring this motion. Mr. Depp gave valid contact information for Ms. Deuters that she could be contacted through her anticipated attorneys. It is not Mr. Depp's fault that the discovery mechanism Ms. Heard's counsel decided to employ was a facially invalid Virginia subpoena. Moreover, Mr. Depp went above and beyond by working to obtain Ms. Deuters' voluntary agreement to appear voluntarily for deposition, notwithstanding the utter lack of diligence, on the part of Ms. Heard's attorneys in failing to take appropriate steps to depose her in accordance with applicable law. Ms. Heard's counsel then made an informed decision not to proceed with the offered deposition after counsel obtained Ms. Deuters' agreement to appear voluntarily. The motion is grossly inappropriate gamesmanship. Okay, so next is Travis McGibbon, but before we do that, I do want to go to one of the exhibits here that it actually shows the email exchange. We've got exhibit one here. It shows the email exchange between them about Gina Deuters. So let's see here. Okay. Exhibit one and exhibit two, actually. Okay. So we've got, we can start back with January 21st, 2022. This is an email from Elaine Bredehoft to Samuel Moniz of Brown Rudnick, so one of Johnny Depp's attorneys. Look at all these emails in the CC line, in the two line, in the CC line. That's a lot of lawyers. It's a lot of lawyers reading a lot of emails, and everybody gets to bill for time that they are on these emails. That's how fees can add up real quick. Okay, so Elaine sends this email to Sam, who is one of Johnny Depp's attorneys, saying, "Sam, we understand the following depositions are on for next week. This includes yours. The person most knowledgeable of Action Property Management, and then Aaron Borum, Joel Mandel, Gina Deuters, Sean Bett. We understand the following are not on for next week. Elon Musk, Stephen Deuters, being rescheduled to next week or following. James Franco, corporate designee of WME, corporate designee of Warner Brothers. Hector Galindo, please confirm if these lists are accurate on your end. Thank you, Elaine." And then, there's some other emails from before that, but I think this is a decent place to start. "Elaine, thanks for the response." This is on the next day, it looks like. No, same day. Same day as before. "Elaine, thanks for the response. With respect to Gina Deuters, I don't believe you're correct that the deposition is going forward next week. Ms. Deuters is a UK resident and is not subject to subpoena power or jurisdiction in Virginia. We have not agreed to accept service, and even if we had, the Virginia subpoena you emailed our office would be wholly meaningless as to a non-resident Virginia. We can look into whether Ms. Deuters might agree to a voluntary deposition, but are not in a position to commit one way or the other on that today, Sam. All right. Then we have Elaine's response 2 days later saying, Sam, thank you for confirming my list on which depositions are on and off for this coming week. It's correct. We will proceed accordingly, except as to Gina Deuters. For Ms. Deuters, we serve both subpoenas on Brown Rudnick as Ms. Deuters retained counsel and the designated party to receive any communications on her behalf on November 30th, 2021. Mr. Depp's interrogatory responses identified and supplemental interrogatory responses maintained that Gina Deuters can only be contacted through plaintiff's counsel. Mr. Depp never supplemented by providing any different contact information since October 2019, over 2 years ago. Therefore, Ms. Hurd served the subpoenas on Ms. Deuters' counsel based on Mr. Depp's sworn interrogatory responses. Neither Ms. Deuters nor Mr. Depp served any timely objections to either subpoena or challenged service. Yet no documents were produced on December 19th. We raised all these issues some time ago, and you said you would look into it and never responded with a follow-up. Even after that, Mr. Depp did not supplement by providing any different contact information for Ms. Deuters and is now stopped from doing so after the service of the subpoenas, no objections being served, and nearly 2 months have passed as we rapidly approach the close of discovery. Ms. Hurd obtained valid service of these subpoenas on Ms. Deuters, intends to proceed with the deposition as noticed on January 27th, and we will send you the Zoom link. If Ms. Deuters or Brown Rudnick, as counsel for either or both Ms. Deuters and Mr. Depp, fail to appear as noticed, they do so at their own risk, and we will address the issue with the court. Thank you for your consideration, Elaine. So, giving a little bit of credit here to Elaine, there is a little bit of an argument that she has here that they didn't object to the subpoenas, but it's not clear to me that they actually needed to object within a certain period of time for that. I'm not fully up to speed on Virginia. Civil procedure, I should say. Sorry, brain fart. But you know, if they have some specific rules on it, but you know, what exactly is the you know, if they have a specific deadline for it, but it's not immediately clear to me that they have a deadline like that. That, or at least if there was, that it had passed. Anyway, next email is from the same day from Sam Moniz again saying, Elaine, if you have authority for the proposition that emailing subpoenas to counsel for a party has the effect of compelling a non-party to do anything, by all means, send that authority to us so that we can review it. Well, that answers that. As you know, we have never agreed to accept service on Ms. Deuters' behalf and, incidentally, have never been authorized to do so. You have been fully on notice for that fact for months. So, and this is true. So when it comes to service, like this is something that is very important, having proper service of the complaint when you are opening a lawsuit, or service of a motion, or service of a notice of deposition, service of a subpoena, for example. So when it comes to a third party, if they haven't been brought in otherwise, generally speaking, the first time that you serve anyone with anything in a lawsuit, the first time, generally speaking, the default rule is like you have to serve them in person somehow. There's exceptions to it, right? Because if you have been attempting service on them, there's certain things that you can do after a certain number of attempts. And if you happen to know that there's an attorney that is representing someone or is representing someone's interests, it could be a third party that you can reach out to them and say, hey, opposing counsel, I understand that you are handling, you know, communications for this particular witness. Will you accept service on their behalf? You can do that. You can request that. And if they say yes, then that's proper service. But you can't just assume that they're going to accept service if you don't ask. Evidently, it seems like Amber Heard's team never asked if they would accept service. And so, so now they have this issue that it seems like they just assumed that because they said contact Gina Deuters through us, that meant that they would accept service by email. You can't assume that. Okay. Moving on, and setting aside the question of service, if you have authority for the proposition that Virginia law authorizes the use of Virginia subpoenas as to non-residents of Virginia who are not present in Virginia, we would appreciate seeing that authority also. I also have no idea why you would take the facially incorrect position that a Virginia subpoena has any effect as to someone outside Virginia. After all, you have issued dozens of California subpoenas to California residents, thereby conceding that a Virginia subpoena alone is not effective as to persons in California. The same principle obviously applies with even greater force as to persons outside the United States. And finally, if you have any authority for the proposition that a UK resident who is not a party and is not a Virginia resident or present in Virginia is subject to jurisdiction in Virginia, you can send that authority to us as well. In absence of such authority, your demands are threats have no valid basis in law or fact and are not a productive use of your time or ours. In other words, you're burning a lot of attorney's fees here, Elaine, is what they're saying. As indicated in my email below, we can explore whether Ms. Deuters is willing to appear voluntarily, but I very much doubt that even if she is, she would be willing to do so this week. Given the fact that she's in the UK and this is going on in Virginia, although it sounds like from what they were talking about with the Zoom links, it sounds like they were doing it electronically. So I guess presumably she wouldn't need to fly to Virginia or wherever for it. But still, people have schedules, people have lives. I don't know that we have an address for Ms. Deuters, but if you intend to attempt to seek discovery via international processes in the UK, which is the only option open to you unless she agrees to appear voluntarily, we can see if we are able to obtain that information for you. Pretty good email, actually. And then we've got November 30th, 2021. So this is actually some earlier emails below. Okay. So these are earlier emails about this particular issue from Adam Nadelhoft, AKA Baby Rottenborn, who actually is not so much a Baby Rottenborn because he's apparently a partner at the law firm that Elaine is also a partner at as well. Okay. This is also sent to everyone. It's sent to like everyone. Okay. Ben et al. Okay. So I guess addressing Ben Chu. Attached are subpoenas to Gina Deuters that were filed with the court today. This should also be considered service upon Ms. Deuters, as in Mr. Depp's disclosures. He stated that service for Ms. Deuters should be through Mr. Depp's counsel. Best, Adam. So again, making the mistake of assuming that they are accepting service by email. And then Sam responds. Is this the same day? Same day. Like 3.5 hours later. Adam, we have not previously agreed and are not currently authorized to accept service on behalf of Gina Deuters. We should also note that we understand Stephen and Gina Deuters to now be resident in the UK and likely not subject to subpoena in the US. We will look into this issue and can discuss this with you further, but as of today's date, you should not assume that you have served the subpoena or that it is effective. Best, Sam. So, okay, I take back what Elaine said about having a possibly good argument about them not objecting sooner, because same day he told them, he said, nope, this is not effective service for several reasons. Number one, we have never said that you can serve her by email through us. She has never said that you can serve her by email through us. And also that's a Virginia subpoena. She's from the UK. You have to use something else. So they just, I mean, what it does look like, assuming that there are no other emails in between November 2021 and late January 2022, assuming that there aren't any like extra conversations in between then, like, if this is it, this is pretty much it, then it looks to me like legitimately Amber Heard's legal team here basically took their response at the end of November 2021 and then didn't do anything with it. And then at the end of January 2022 was like, oh, oops, we're just assuming that Woo. Sorry, guys. Internet froze up. I'm back. Don't go anywhere. Let's see. Okay. Can I reshare this? Here. Okay. Good. We're back. All right, I just have to restart this page over here on the side. Okay. All right, yep, nope, sorry guys. That was not your fault. That was the internet here. sometimes it happens to the best of us. Okay, but glad we all stayed calm and let's continue. So basically the point here is what it looks like to me based on this framing. And of course there could be some more detail here that we are missing because we are getting the argument from Johnny Depp's side here. But what it looks like is Amber Heard's team was notified on the same day that they emailed them about the filing of the subpoena. They were notified by Johnny Depp's team saying, you didn't do it right. And then they didn't do anything about it. So until it was like basically at the deadline to get these depositions in. Okay, moving on to Travis McGivern. So Travis McGivern. The motion is especially preposterous as to Travis McGivern. Mr. Depp provided Mr. McGivern's known contact information, a home address, no later than February of 2021, 13 months before the discovery cutoff. 13 months. 13 months, guys. Ms. Heard's counsel never raised any issue with the adequacy of that contact information and never reached out to Mr. Depp to suggest that she needed more information. A year later, and less than a month before the discovery cutoff, Ms. Heard finally issued subpoenas for documents and testimony from Mr. McGivern on or about February 16th, 2022. Whoa, that's late. Setting the production date for March 9th, 2022 and the deposition date for March 11th, 2022. Ms. Heard apparently had difficulty serving Mr. McGivern, but she did not communicate that fact to Mr. Depp. And I read it like that because it has super emphasis on that one point, right? Because it's in bold and it's italicized, which as I've said before, when it comes to legal writing, generally speaking, what you're taught in law school is if you use italics or you use the bold function, you have to use it sparingly because it's like pounding your fist on the table. So you want to be, you know, you've got to use it where it's necessary. So the fact that they use italics and bold here is like super emphasis. It's like they're yelling it across the room, like, but she did not communicate that fact to Mr. Depp. Yeah, in the chat, Brick Cormier, it's like using all caps. It totally is. Yes, exactly. Like as if you're screaming at them. Okay, indeed, as far as Mr. Depp knew, the deposition of Mr. McGibbon was still proceeding on March 10th, 2022. Accordingly, Mr. Depp served a cross notice of deposition of Mr. McGibbon on February 25th, 2022. Even after receiving Mr. Depp's cross notice, Ms. Heard did not reach out to indicate that she had any difficulty in serving Mr. McGibbon or request any additional contact information. Okay. I'm waiting for where they start saying that Amber Heard somehow makes this argument like it's as if it's Johnny Depp's fault. Ms. Heard's counsel in the final weeks of discovery adopted the position that they would refuse to inform Mr. Depp whether depositions noticed by Ms. Heard were actually going forward. Huh. Okay. As a result of that unusual tactic by Ms. Heard's attorneys, Mr. Depp could never be certain whether a particular deposition was going forward until his counsel received a Zoom link the day before each deposition. Oh, boy. Something tells me that they were just very disorganized at Amber Heard's side. There's something about the part about Gina Deuters, the fact that they didn't follow up after that November 30th communication until late January, which is like super late considering trial started on April 11th. That is like a massive delay. Anyway, so there's that. And then this, the fact that they wouldn't get Zoom links until the day before the deposition. So they're like, oh, is the deposition going on? I don't know. Maybe we'll find out. And then they get a Zoom link the day before and they're like, oh, okay. So it's like basically Amber Heard's team is about as casual about these depositions as like LawTube is about sending StreamYard links to one another to collaborate. Like, hey, you guys want to join my live stream? Here's the backstage link. Come join. Hey, you guys want to come for a deposition? Opposing counsel? Yeah. All right, cool. It's tomorrow. Because Ms. Heard's attorneys refused to give the professional courtesy of providing such information, Mr. Depp's counsel reached out to third parties to obtain a current telephone number of Mr. McGibbon and were able to get in touch with him by telephone. Mr. McGibbon advised counsel that he had not been served. Mr. Depp's counsel then inquired whether he was willing to appear for deposition regardless of the lack of service, and he indicated that he was willing to do so. Lucky for Amber Heard's team. I mean, also kind of lucky for Johnny Depp's team because, I mean, arguably his testimony was very good for Johnny Depp. So it is good that he sat for a deposition because then he was ultimately able to testify at trial as well. Counsel for Mr. Depp then promptly reached out to Ms. Heard's counsel by email, informing them that Mr. McGibbon was available to appear on the deposition date noticed by Ms. Heard and providing his email address, which he had provided to counsel in the course of the telephone call, so that Ms. Heard could forward him a Zoom link for his remote deposition. Basically, the sense that I am getting from this, like the picture that I have in my head is like Johnny Depp's attorneys being like, do we really have to do your job for you? Do we really have, like we're the ones that have to reach out to find his phone number, to get in touch with him, to find out if he's been properly served, to find out what's going on here, ask him if he's willing to sit for a deposition. Like, really, do we have to be doing your job for you? Like, I wouldn't be surprised if that sort of frustration or sentiment was felt on Johnny Depp's legal team side. Oh, yikes. Incredibly, council form is heard, took the position. Incredibly, council form is heard, took the position that it was somehow too short notice to depose Mr. McGivern on that date, that Ms. Heard had noticed and Mr. Depp had cross-noticed, and they refused to take Mr. McGivern's deposition on that date. In a final effort to accommodate Ms. Heard, counsel for Mr. Depp offered to agree to allow Ms. Heard to conduct the deposition the following week. Ms. Heard's counsel refused, preferring to try to exclude Mr. McGivern by this motion. Man. That is, it seems like there are some background issues. And that was the suspicion that I had during the trial also, was it felt like there were certain indications throughout trial that made me feel like there was something going on behind the scenes. Like there was some sort of disorganization, with Amber Heard's legal team, coming from, like, you know, for example, when Elaine was either doing a direct examination or a cross examination of a particular witness, and then trying to introduce exhibits, and then, you know, but not realizing that the exhibits that she was trying to introduce were already admitted, that doesn't seem like a mark of her personal intelligence on that one, or her personal competence on that one. That's just like strictly someone should be keeping track of these things, and someone should be sort of letting her know by maybe supplementing her notes that she is probably using, that she's definitely using for these examinations of these witnesses, to like supplement her notes to say, P.S. this has already been admitted. This is exhibit XYZ. Things like that throughout the trial indicated to me that there was a lack of organization, but this is just giving me confirmation vibes of all of that. Ms. Heard's representation to this court that she has somehow been denied an opportunity to depose Mr. McGivern is outright false. Ooh, we've got italics and bold right here. Mr. McGivern was literally made available for deposition on the date noticed by Ms. Heard, and Ms. Heard refused to proceed. Moreover, Ms. Heard was in possession of contact information for Mr. McGivern for more than a year and never complained of any purported deficiencies in that information. All right. If she waited until the last minute to issue a subpoena and then failed to communicate any difficulty in effecting service to Mr. Depp, that lack of diligence on the part of Ms. Heard's attorneys cannot properly be laid at Mr. Depp's door. The bottom line is this: Ms. Heard had contact information for Mr. McGivern for many months. She had an opportunity to depose him, and she refused to do so, preferring to try to exclude testimony rather than explore it in discovery. This is gamesmanship, pure and simple. Yeah. So, and then going to exhibit 4 here. This is when they say that they provided. Did I pass it? No, I don't think I passed it yet. This one has a number of exhibits. Yeah, the interrogatories here. So interrogatories. Okay. Let's see. Let's look for it. Do they have... Actually, you know what? I don't want to go through here for the contact information because I don't want to potentially dox someone. I'm assuming that the addresses and phone numbers and whatnot have all been changed or somehow, or were given, like, not like their home numbers, but on second thought, I don't want to go through that. Okay. But interesting. I just the like I said, the fact that they are seemingly having to do the work of Amber Heard's lawyers on Johnny Depp's side is definitely frustrating, especially when you know that those efforts, like I've been in that position before where you are a litigator and in order to kind of like do the right thing, you have to do some extra work and it's not even necessarily like for your client. You kind of still have to, you kind of still have to bill for it. It just like you're billing your own client to do work for the other side in a way. Not to say that that is like that is going to disadvantage your client, but it's just to sort of like prevent the other side from having further arguments. Like that's probably why they did it, is to be like, all right, let's make some phone calls, find out what's going on, because otherwise this could potentially put us in a weird place if we don't. It's just it sucks. It sucks. Okay, part three, Keenan Wyatt. Unsurprisingly, Ms. Heard's motion with respect to Keenan Wyatt contains yet more misrepresentations. Mr. Depp provided the known contact information for Mr. Wyatt, telephone number and email address, no later than February 2021. Same, same. A year later, Ms. Heard's counsel inquired whether Mr. Depp's counsel would agree to accept service for Mr. Wyatt and requested additional contact information. Because Mr. Depp's counsel does not represent Mr. Wyatt, it was necessary for counsel to get in touch with Mr. Wyatt directly, which counsel did by calling Mr. Wyatt's number. Counsel obtained Mr. Wyatt's additional address information, which was then promptly provided to counsel for Ms. Heard by email once it came into the possession of counsel for Mr. Depp on February 16th, 2022. So here, I mean, here is an example of what should have happened with Gina Duders, where you send an email and say, "Hey, will you accept service for so and so?" That's how you do it. So someone on Amber Heard's team knew that that is what you were supposed to do, but ostensibly, when it came to Gina Duders, someone just either brain farted or something. Fill in the blanks. Choose your own adventure. Decide for yourself. It should be noted that Ms. Heard's claim that such information was not provided until March of 2022 is false. That is merely the date Mr. Depp supplemented his interrogatory response to include information that had already been provided to Ms. Heard's counsel. Despite being provided with Mr. Wyatt's additional contact information, Ms. Heard's counsel never so much as issued a subpoena to him. Sorry. That was in italics and bold. Let me reread that. Despite being provided with Mr. Wyatt's additional contact information, Ms. Heard's counsel never so much as issued a subpoena to him, much less attempted to serve it. Having waited until 2022 to even inquire about Mr. Wyatt, geez, and having never even attempted to actually serve Mr. Wyatt with a subpoena, despite being provided with additional contact information as soon as it came into the possession of Mr. Depp's counsel, it is nothing short of astounding that Ms. Heard has the nerve, more shade, the nerve to seek to exclude him on the basis that the contact information was somehow inadequate. Again, the lack of diligence by Ms. Heard's attorneys is not Mr. Depp's fault. Mr. Depp timely provided all contact information in his possession. Whew. I almost wonder also if maybe Amber Heard's team just like didn't believe they were going to trial until like early 2022. 'Cause especially in civil, you know, I've said this many times before, in civil litigation, it is rare for a case to go to trial because the vast majority of cases either get dismissed or they get withdrawn or they settle out. That's generally speaking what happens. There's a lot of cases that settle. It's very, very rare for a civil case to go to trial, like I said. But in this particular case, I mean, Well, in any case, what I was taught relatively early on is every single lawsuit that you have, every single case that you have in your case list, treat that case as if it's going to go to trial. Because if it doesn't and you're prepared, you probably have things lined up pretty well for a good settlement. But if you're not prepared and it does go to trial, you're screwed. You're absolutely screwed, because then, like, you're trying to scramble at the end. You're at such a disadvantage. The other side is probably already all lined up. And so, like, there are so many things that can go wrong from that. So, like, this here makes me feel like I said, it makes me, I get this sense that, like, they almost didn't believe that it was actually going to go to trial until they were like, oops, it's January 2022. Trial is supposed to pop off in April. We have 4 months. That's not enough time. We have all of these witnesses that we need to depose. We have all of these, like, all of this information that we need to get, documents that we need to acquire. Holy crap. All of this stuff that we have to do, hair on fire, Zoom link sent out the day before the deposition. Like, this is kind of like how it feels. And anyone that has been at least at a firm where a case has actually gone to trial and has been pulled off of their cases to help with, like, the pre-trial litigation process, like the very, like, the last minute, like, trial preparation work. If you are at all familiar with that process, you know that that becomes all encompassing. So the fact that, like, they're, like, trying to do that and at the same time trying to do these depositions, it's just like, I'm wondering what's going on here at the two law firms that are representing Amber Heard's side. It's nuts. By the way, Lucky, thank you so much for gifting more memberships to folks in the chat. That is so, so kind of you. Really, really appreciate that. Okay. Moving on in here. Part 4, Kevin Murphy and Samantha McMillan. Ms. Heard's motion with respect to Kevin Murphy and Samantha McMillan is equally nonsensical. Indeed, it is outright frivolous. Mr. Depp provided Ms. Heard with what contact information he has for both witnesses. Ms. Heard apparently failed to serve Mr. Murphy, whom Ms. Heard inaccurately claims is Mr. Depp's employee. In fact, Mr. Murphy was once employed by Mr. Depp, but has not been for years. But Mr. Depp provided both a telephone number and address. So how is Ms. Heard's failure to serve him Mr. Depp's fault? And again, Ms. Heard never contacted Mr. Depp to complain about the contact information, request additional information, or communicate any difficulty in serving Mr. Murphy. As for Ms. McMillan, Mr. Depp provided Ms. Heard with what contact information he has for her. Like Mr. Murphy, Ms. McMillan is not an employee of Mr. Depp and is not under his control. If Ms. McMillan did not respond to counsel's telephone calls, that is not Mr. Depp's fault. And again, Ms. Heard's counsel never once reached out to Mr. Depp's counsel to seek additional information or to seek any assistance in obtaining Ms. McMillan's cooperation. Also of note, Ms. Heard issued a subpoena in 2019 to Ms. McMillan and listed a Santa Monica, California address for Ms. McMillan, which never appeared on Ms. Heard's own interrogatory responses. It appears then that Ms. Heard had access to information about Ms. McMillan's address. If Ms. Heard never followed up, and she appears to have never issued another subpoena to Ms. McMillan in the 3 years following, that failure is Ms. Heard's fault, not Mr. Depp's. Yeah. This is, I feel like I'm getting more confirmation about this, like, either lack of, lack of feeling that this is actually going to go to trial. Part 5, Andy Milner and Leonard Damien. As to Andy Milner and Leonard Damien, Ms. Heard's motion should also be denied. Mr. Milner was identified in Mr. Depp's interrogatory responses and his contact information was provided. Ms. Heard is correct that the interrogatory response omitted Mr. Milner's last name, but any suggestion that Ms. Heard was misled by the fact that is belied by that fact is belied by the fact that Mr. Milner was listed with his full name on Ms. Heard's own interrogatory responses, meaning she was the one providing that information. So how could she complain about the information that was provided? Similarly, Ms. Heard's complaint that Mr. Damien was omitted from Mr. Depp's interrogatory responses is belied by the fact that he was included on Ms. Heard's interrogatory responses so that she was fully aware of him and that he might have relevant knowledge. Moreover, Ms. Heard issued a subpoena to Mr. Damien, though she waited until February 16th, 2022 to do so. Late. That's insanely late. That's like in anxiety inducing late. That's wake up in the middle of the night late. That's, you know, in the middle of a shower, you like look over and gasp late. Like that's late. And sought his deposition in March, 2022, clearly aware that he was a potential witness. Mr. Depp cross-noticed Mr. Damien's deposition on February 25th, 2022. Mr. Depp's counsel then reached out to Mr. Damien at the same time that Mr. Depp reached out to Mr. McGivern, and for the same reasons discussed above, to determine whether the deposition was proceeding. Although Mr. Damien had not been served, Mr. Depp obtained his voluntary agreement to appear on the date noticed by Ms. Heard or alternatively the following week and notified Ms. Heard's counsel of that fact. Ms. Heard's counsel refused to proceed on the date they had noticed or the following week. They should not be rewarded for such transparent gamesmanship, and they have suffered no actual prejudice from any errors in Mr. Depp's interrogatory responses. Okay, so by the way, when they're talking about one side noticing a deposition, it means that what they're doing is they send a document that looks a lot like these motions, right? It's got the same sort of cover page with the lawsuit and the case number, and it says notice of deposition, and it gives a date and a time and a place saying you've got to show up, bring such and such documents. It'll list them out. It gives all these definitions. And so basically you say we're requiring you to show up on this date at this place at this time so that we can talk to you and ask you a bunch of questions and make you super uncomfortable and put you in the hot seat. So the fact that like they noticed a deposition, Amber Heard's team noticed a deposition on a particular date for February. For February 16th, 2022. And then never followed up, never said anything to the opposing side about the fact that they were unable to reach him. And then when Johnny Depp's attorneys reached out and called him and said, oh, okay, yeah, he agrees to the date that you noticed. And they're like, no, we can't do that. We can't have a deposition that was a date and time and place that we originally requested. That you can see where they're talking about gamesmanship here. Because it does seem like they are not being transparent. It does seem like they are playing games here as opposed to actually trying to do their jobs and preparing a case for trial. That is the way that it looks. Now, in alternatively, it could very well be that what happened on Amber Heard's legal team is that they, like I said, it seems like the sense that I get is that their hair is on fire, that they're like, we have all these depositions that we have to get. They're trying to notice all of these depositions. They're sending Skype notices, you know, Skype links the day before, and like just barely by the skin of their teeth making these things happen is the vibe that I get. And so it could very well be that they were like, well, we haven't heard from this witness, so you know, that date that we noticed, it's probably not going to happen. It's probably not going to go forward. We've got all of these other things that we have to do over here. So we don't really have time to go on the date that we noticed. But that's, if you requested a particular date, it's reasonable to expect that you are available on the date that you yourself requested. So it could be gamesmanship. It could be gross incompetence. I don't know which one is worse. Okay, paragraph six, purported issues with Mr. Depp's witness list. Ms. Heard's criticisms of Mr. Depp's witness list are unwarranted and inappropriate. Mr. Depp properly indicated in his witness list that he intends to call Malcolm Connolly and Sam Sarker by video link while reserving the right to call them in person if he is able to arrange it with the witnesses. Excuse me. Bafflingly, Ms. Heard suggests without citation to anything that somehow should require Mr. Depp to call the witnesses in person or not at all. That is not consistent with the applicable order, which merely requires the identification of witnesses anticipated to testify by video. The notion that identifying a witness as testifying by video while reserving rights to call him in person somehow violates the order is nonsense. Ms. Heard cannot complain of the slightest prejudice as a result, nor does she have a viable argument that this is not consistent with the requirements of the order allowing video testimony. Moreover, Ms. Heard's suggestion that the court should limit the testimony to in-person appearances makes absolutely no sense. As is clear from Mr. Depp's witness list, the default position for these witnesses is that both will be remote, not live. Ms. Heard's counsel is, and not for the first time, simply trying to invent requirements that do not exist for the transparently improper purposes of limiting or inconveniencing Mr. Depp's witnesses. For several other witnesses, Mr. Depp indicated a reservation of rights to call by video link. Otherwise, by deposition testimony, see Dr. David Kipper, Isaac Baruch, Kate James, Adam Waldman, Jack Wiggum, and Christian Carino. The order authorizing testimony by video specifically permits this. For instance, the order specifically states that the order does not exclude the ability of the parties to designate portions of depositions or prior testimony of any such witness identified on the party's witness list as testifying by remote audiovisual means. Mystifyingly, Ms. Heard argues that it is somehow inappropriate for Mr. Depp to have indicated that such witnesses may testify by video as well as by deposition testimony, but that is perfectly consistent with the order, and Ms. Heard has been appropriately informed that any live testimony will be by video. Ms. Heard's request that these witnesses be limited to deposition testimony only has no valid basis in fact or law. Conclusion. The motion should be denied in its entirety. The draconian sanctions sought by Ms. Heard are wildly disproportionate to any perceived deficiencies in Mr. Depp's responses, and Ms. Heard has not been prejudiced in the least by Mr. Depp. Indeed, the record of Ms. Heard's shameless gamesmanship is clear. Shameless gamesmanship, y'all. This is what they say. And so then it goes to the exhibits. So, yeah. All right. What do you guys think? She wanted to keep out Gina Deuters, Travis McGivern, Keenan Wyatt, Kevin Murphy, Samantha McMillan, Andy Milner, Leonard Damien, all of these folks. And it seems like it seems to me that it could have been gamesmanship. It looks a lot like gamesmanship. It looks a lot like her attorneys were just abusing the process, playing games with the other side. It could also be that they were incredibly disorganized, way behind the ball, caught with their pants down. I don't know how many metaphors can we bring in here for this, but basically to show that they were unprepared for the stage of litigation that they found themselves in. And for one reason or another, who knows what. I've said before that it could be because of the expense of the litigation at that point. You know, I've been part of those conversations before where you have a case that has just, for one reason or another, has required a lot of time and attention. and you know that you're not going to be getting paid for all of that work. And so it's just like this, lead weight at the firm that is just like sinking money and not making money for the firm. And so, you know, you start looking at that case a little bit differently. Like what can we do with this case so that we are not, we're not falling down on any of our professional responsibilities here, right? Like we are doing what we are supposed to do to be zealous advocates and to properly maintain this case so that it doesn't like fumble the ball for the client. But at the same time is also not going to tank this firm and make it so that we have to close up shop. Sometimes that happens. And so then you start, figuring out how to do things that are less ideal than what you would like to do otherwise for that particular case. It could be that this is one of those, it was just sinking that much money in that period of time. But I don't know. There is also a lot of information about the insurance, paying for the attorney's fees. I don't know how much of that had actually been paid to the law firms or what. I read the complaints of at least one of them. I don't think I read the second one. There's multiple lawsuits about those. Anyway. There are a couple super chats here. Okay. Patty Joe Sloss, thanks so much for the super chat. Says, don't forget to like 1339 watching. Type heart to show your love for all the hardworking mods. Yeah. Thank you, mods. I always love a good opportunity to thank our mods and thank everybody in the chat. I know that sometimes people get into disagreements and whatnot. Sometimes people can get a bit heated when people do disagree. But generally speaking, I think that the chat tends to be very positive, very productive. And I think that the folks in the chat have a lot to do with that, but so do the mods. So we've got a lot of really great mods in this particular chat. Look at that. Look at all these beautiful hearts that are showing up. And special shout out to Secret McSquirrel, because I know that he has been undergoing treatment. And the fact that he has been in the chat here and I've seen elsewhere in other live streams is also particularly wonderful. And I just appreciate the heck out of it. So yes, thank you. And thank you, Patty Joe Sloss, for the super chat. And then also, Elron, did the judge have to read all of this? Yes. Unfortunately, the judge had to read all of this and more. Because this is just the opposition to the motion in limine. Amber Heard had also filed her motion in limine to it. And it could very well be that they also filed a reply to the opposition as well. So all of those filing papers have to be read by the judge. She's got to make some decisions on it. And so that's a lot of court resources that are involved in that as well. So, alrighty. Okay. Oh, did I? I'm so sorry, Secret My Squirrel. I didn't realize that you were she. sorry, folks are saying that in the chat. I didn't mean to assume anything. anyway, well, I think that is about all that I have, but I do lucky. that's funny. It's I'm confused about Secret McSquirrel's nuts. Yes, I am. That is funny. Anyway, okay. So, my apologies for that. But also, nonetheless, Secret McSquirrel, thank you again for all of your wonderful, wonderful moderation in the chat. And I hope that you do recover very well. And here's another super chat from Erich. I think I'm I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Thank you for the great channel, LB. Confusing trial. Yes. Yes, it is a little bit of a confusing trial, but thank you so much for watching and engaging. And thanks so much for the super chat. And Leanne G, thanks so much for your super chat. With all this disorganized mess on AH's side, I'm reminded of their table during the trial. Yeah, all the post-it notes, right? there were arguably a number of indications here about some sort of, I don't know, level of organization or disorganization, perhaps. Okay. Anyhow, I think that for me about does it for today. I hope you guys enjoyed this. Be on the lookout for, I'm going to try to publish tomorrow, another video on the Marilyn Manson case as a follow-up to yesterday's live stream on the anti-slap motions. I had some extra thoughts on it, so I pre-recorded it. I'm going to try to have it out tomorrow. We will see if I'm able to do that. But otherwise, so keep an eye out for that. But otherwise, I hope you guys have a wonderful rest of your week and then a great weekend. And we've got some more stuff coming up next week. There will be more motion work for Marilyn Manson that we're going to be going over. We are also going to be going through, I plan on having a video sort of like I said in the beginning, sort of encapsulating the Vanessa Bryant trial, Vanessa Bryant versus LA County Sheriff's Department, LA County Fire Department, and a number of individuals. So, you know, there should be a video coming out on that next week as well. Some stuff like that. So anyway, And one last super sticker here, Linda Poulon. Thank you so much for that. I really appreciate it. So with that, I hope you guys have a great rest of your week, great weekend, and I will see you guys in the next video.